I've chosen as a scripture lesson the book of Daniel, the 12th chapter, beginning at verse 1. Daniel 12, beginning with verse 1. At that time shall Michael stand up, the great prince, which standeth for the children of thy people. There shall be a time of trouble such as never was since there was a nation, even to that same time. At that time thy people shall be delivered, every one that shall be found written in the book. And many of them that sleep in the dust of the earth shall awake, some to everlasting life, and some to shame and everlasting contempt. And they that be wise shall shine as the brightness of the firmament, and they that turn many to righteousness as the stars for ever and ever. But thou, O Daniel, shut up the words, and seal the book, even to the time of the end. Many shall run to and fro, and knowledge shall be increased. That's Daniel 12, 1 through 4. Personally, I've heard a good many sermons based on Daniel 12, 4. Many shall run to and fro, and knowledge shall be increased. And they were interesting, and I have to say that regardless of the interpretation or its application, that it is a remarkable prophecy. Many shall run to and fro and knowledge shall be increased. Just take it on the face of it from the King James translation of 1611. It's quite amazing because when you say that many shall run to and fro, and you think of 1611, what kind of transportation did they have? Well, you walked, you rode horseback, you took carriage, but they did have boats. But they didn't have the type of transportation we have. So the travel back then compared to travel today is just a great contrast. In fact, this very week, I noticed that they had tested a new rocket-powered plane that goes 10 times the speed of sound. Now, I mean, that is 600 and some miles of the speed of an hour is the speed of sound, but this was 10 times the speed of sound. And then also this week I've been following the progress of our shuttle in space, and I realize they're out there traveling several thousand miles an hour, but they don't know it. They're just performing tasks and working in weightlessness. So we have all of these things. We have new types of ships and trains. We have trains that go hundreds of miles an hour. And even our new cars are an advancement. The first car I remember in our family was a 1923 air-cooled Franklin. It had a slanted nose, real big old high black. They were all black, but it did have captain's chairs in it, and it was quite something. But after that, we got a 32 Studebaker that was a big improvement. But everything we have, and as far as travel is concerned, is so far advanced. So when he says many shall run to and fro, we just see people traveling freely worldwide. Some of our friends, of our church friends, I never think of them being world travelers, but they have been and are. They say, well, I was going to Germany this week, or I went to Scotland or Ireland, or I went to Italy or someplace, just like Russia or China or someplace else. They don't even think anything of it. So we are living in an age. If we take this verse as its face, many shall run to and fro, we see that this is surely being fulfilled. But the thing of it is that what it's talking about is the time of the end. That's the bottom line that we're emphasizing here, even to the time of the end. He wants Daniel to shut up the words and seal the book, even to the time of the end. And so this seems to be an end time prophecy, this being fulfilled, that many should run to and fro. And we are surely seeing it fulfilled. Then it says, knowledge shall be increased. And then again, we're looking at the information explosion that all of us are that have part in today. Most everyone in this room has a computer or works on computer, has something to do with computers. And it's an amazing. In fact, the new cameras, new digital cameras, and the things that they will do, all these are great advancements. Knowledge is increasing. And the transfer and the sharing of knowledge is just absolutely amazing. I've gone into Google sometimes and punch in a word, and they say, we have 2 million sites where this is used. I've had some even more than that, and I said, 2 million sites that where you could find information. And so it is an information explosion, and we have all get to the place that you just have to tune it out, which you don't want, and you just because you can't begin to even share it all. The thing that I observe in this, and this has to do with the end time, is that, yes, knowledge is increasing, but wisdom and righteousness are decreasing. In other words, people, there's a difference between knowledge and wisdom, and as a result, we find, yes, people have more knowledge, but it doesn't mean that they're wiser than they were. In fact, a good many of them deny the God that made them and don't feel that there's any. They don't have any time for the Bible. They don't have any time for church. And they're just going their own way. So knowledge is not necessarily wisdom. And knowledge is increasing. We know that this is the time of the end, especially because as it goes on, wisdom and righteousness are decreasing. What I've done thus far is take this verse, or this portion of this verse, at its face in the King James Version. But then you begin to dig into other versions and you find out that it has another story to tell. In Moffat's translation, he says, ere then many shall give way and trouble shall be multiplied on earth. Companion Bible says the same thing, only says, ere then many shall turn aside and trouble shall be multiplied on earth. The words you just got through saying, this is the time of the end. Goodspeed and Smith in their American translation says, ere then many shall prove disloyal and troubles shall be many. New English Bible says, many shall be at their wits' end, and punishment will be heavy. So you see that we're beginning to see a different picture of what he's calling the time of the end. In fact, when I use this term and see this term used, I feel it is in an indefinite period. In other words, the time of the end. What do you see in this? The end is more definite, but the time of the end may not be all that definite. I think of 1 Thessalonians 5, when he said of the times and seasons, brethren, ye have no need that I write unto you, for you know the day of the Lord will so come as a thief in the night. One of the things that you notice about that word seasons, when you look it up in the lexicons, it's talking about times and fruiting seasons. I remember Augusta Grove especially, people are wanting the first ripe tomato, or they want the first squash, or the first watermelon, or the first this, or the first that, all those gardeners. Well, I had my first tomato today. And it just like it was something, you know. But anyway, what I'm trying to say to you is fruiting seasons. You just don't, that's a season. It's not a pinpointed hour when you're going to go out and pick the first ripe peach or the first tomato. So it is an indication to us that we are coming in the time of the end, but maybe not the end. And another example I used, you're coming up Highway 25 and it says Greenville, South Carolina, 44 miles. What part of Greenville, South Carolina? Are you talking about the southernmost city limit sign, or are you talking about the city hall? What are you talking about? And so you see that he's not trying to say this is the end, but this is a sign of the time of the end that indicates that the end is coming. I think of another text, and Jesus weighed heavily on Daniel, especially in the 24th chapter of the book of Daniel, when he talks about the abomination of desolation in the holy place spoken of by Daniel the prophet. But the disciples came to him and said, "Tell us, when shall these things be?" Jesus was talking about the destruction of the temple. "When shall these things be? What shall be the sign of thy parousia and of the end of the age?" And Jesus answered and said, "Take heed that no man deceive you. Many shall come in my name," and so on. But at the end of the sixth verse, he says, "The end is not yet. Nation shall rise against nation. There'll be famines, earthquakes, so forth. These are the beginning of sorrows." So anyway, then he goes on down in the 13th verse. "He that shall endure unto the end, the same shall be saved. This gospel of the kingdom," verse 14, "shall be preached in all the inhabited earth as a witness to all nations, and then shall the end come." So you see that in this particular section, he is talking about a time when he would say that there is the end. In other words, when time as we know it, as far as earthly time, will come to an end. But this, as we say in Daniel 12:4, this is a time of the end, an indefinite-like period that he's trying to warn us about. So to me, that gives us the freedom to use texts like Luke 17, when it talks about the coming of the time of the coming of the Lord being like the days of Noah. And then he said the days of Lot. And he's giving these signs, and most of them are general. And in fact, I would say that most people in the world don't see any signs in them at all. Talking about marrying and eating and planting and building and all these different things, they don't look like signs to most people at all. But what we see in the days of Noah, and if you need, you go back to the book of Genesis, especially the sixth chapter, you find out they were days of violence. And we surely are living in days of violence, where mothers kill their children, husbands kill their estranged wives, people go into malls and workplaces and shoot them up. It's senseless violence. And to me, this is an end time prophecy. Maybe not the end, but end time. Days of Lot, perversion and homosexuality and other problems that are just growing. And they don't pinpoint any particular day and hour, but they are signs of the time of the end. Paul, in writing to Timothy, in 2 Timothy, the third chapter, said that talking about the time of the end. He said, in the last days, not the last day, not the last hour, last days, perilous times shall come. And he goes on and names them, lovers of their own selves, covetous, boasters, proud, blasphemers, disobedient to parents, unthankful, unholy, without natural affection, truce breakers, false accusers, incontinent, fierce, despisers of those that are good, traitors, heady, high-minded, lovers of pleasure more than lovers of God, having a form of godliness but denying the power thereof. And he's just going and talking about ever learning, never able to come to the knowledge of the truth. These are talking about the last days, end time, time of the end. And they may be fairly general, but they are nevertheless signs. And we see them all around us, and we're very aware of them. Then taking that thought of, ere then many shall turn aside, or turn away, you have the fourth chapter of 2 Timothy. And he talked about charging Timothy to serve God because of the time of Jesus appearing in his kingdom. Preach the word. Be instant in season, out of season. Reprove, rebuke, exhort with all longsuffering and doctrine. For the time will come, when they will not endure sound doctrine or wholesome words, but after their own lust shall they heap unto themselves teachers having itching ears. I've always asked the question, who has the itching ears, the teachers or the people that they're teaching? I say probably both. The listeners want to hear what they want to hear, and the teachers like to hear, oh, that was good, and you said what I wanted you to say. But these, they turn away their ears from the truth and are turned to fables or fiction. These are things he's talking about. He said, watch in all things, endure afflictions, do the work of an evangelist, make full proof of your ministry, for I am now ready to be offered in the time of my departure's hand. I have fought a good fight, I've finished my course, I've kept the faith. Henceforth there is laid up for me a crown of righteousness, which the Lord, the righteous judge, shall give me at that day, and not to me only, but unto all them also that love his appearing. You see, it's an interesting section. It's a good section because it's talking about the time of the end and the things that will exist and what we should do to counteract it and how we should live in order to be in line when, as he said, that the Lord, the righteous judge, will give me the crown of righteousness, or give us the crown of righteousness if we are faithful. So it's turning away from the truth and be turning to fables. I used to fuss with our own people because many times in our literature and our quarterlies and all, they seemed to see the need to throw fiction into the lessons. And I just felt that that's what people wanted to hear, not truth. As far as the part where it says that many shall prove disloyal, I think back again to Matthew 24, 9th verse. Then shall they deliver you up to be afflicted, and shall kill you. Ye shall be hated of all nations for my name's sake. Then shall many be offended, and shall betray one another, and shall hate one another. And many false prophets shall rise, and shall deceive many. And because iniquity shall abound, the love of many shall grow cold. The other places in talking about this same thing, it said that the daughter-in-law would be against her mother-in-law, and the son against his father, and just no loyalty at all. But these are talking about the time of the end. And Jesus was warning the disciples about that time, about the things that should happen to them, and the things that might happen to us in the end time. The thing that I say, and here this is an answer to a book called On the Churches of America, The Class of the Church of God, Abrahamic Faith as a Pessimistic Adventist Sect. And pessimism is looking on the dark side. And so they say, well, because we talk about the signs of the times, therefore we're pessimistic. But I plead not guilty. We are realistic. We see what is going on about us. But we, in the end, we are optimistic because we know that this time of trouble will be followed by the coming of the Lord. That this time of the end will come up to the time when it will come to the end, when he will say, whoa, this is it, you shall go no further. And God steps in, takes over the reins of government and the world, and establishes his kingdom on this earth. And so in the end, we see the earth restored to its Edenic conditions. We see peace among the nations. We see a single tongue or language. We see man sitting under his own vine and fig and none making him afraid. We see peace in the animal world. All these things that we just we picture as being peaceful and lovely and wonderful, they are what God has in store for us if we are to inherit that kingdom of his. So as we are, we realize, and here I've asked God many times, he never answered me, why did I happen to be born in the end time? Have you ever wondered that? Why did I happen to be around in the end times? Why couldn't I have been back in 1776 or some other time in history? But we're here. And it's up to us to have our eyes open and to realize there is such a thing as the time of the end. When many run to and fro, knowledge is increased, or a time when many will give way and trouble shall be multiplied on earth. We pray for wisdom and insight, but we do look forward to better times.